This is VOA News. I'm Nicole Livis. U.S. President Donald Trump showed no signs Sunday of backing down on his demand for taxpayer funding for a wall along the southern border with Mexico. He spoke to reporters outside the White House before heading to his Maryland retreat at Camp David for discussions with administration officials about border security and policies they plan to pursue this year. In the meantime, he's engaged in a dispute with opposition Democratic lawmakers over his demand for more than $5 billion in funding for the barrier. It's a stalemate that has shut down about a quarter of government operations for 16 days now, already one of the longest closures in U.S. history.
I'm totally involved, but I'm involved with principle, because ultimately it's going to be solved by the principle. Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and myself can solve this in 20 minutes if they want to. If they don't want to, it's going to go on for a long time.
Congressman Adam Smith is the incoming chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. On ABC's This Week Sunday, he said the president hasn't made a case that building a wall in areas where it doesn't already exist will enhance border security.
There is no evidence whatsoever that that's necessary, and yet he's willing to shut down the government and stop paying Border Patrol agents, and in many cases, you know, stop all the efforts that we have made to enhance border security over a campaign promise.
And the shutdown has forced the closure of museums in Washington, with trash going uncollected at understaffed national parks. If it extends to February, food assistance for poorer Americans would be curtailed, as would tax refunds at the height of the annual period when Americans file returns. About 800,000 federal government workers have been furloughed or are continuing to work without pay. President Trump says the U.S. has killed one of the alleged masterminds of the USS Cole bombing, which killed 17 sailors in 2000. He tweeted on Sunday that they killed Jamal al-Badawi and said U.S. efforts against al-Qaeda will continue. This is VOA News. President Trump's national security adviser said Sunday U.S. withdrawal of its 2,000 troops in Syria will not be abrupt and will be conditioned on Turkish assurances that it will not target Kurdish fighters allied with American forces. John Bolton is in Israel for talks with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He said there's no timetable for the troop withdrawal, but that the U.S. presence in Syria is also not unlimited. This is the first public confirmation that the withdrawal process has been slowed. Bolton is headed to Turkey on Monday. A U.S. trade delegation has arrived in Beijing for 2 days of talks. They will focus on an agreement reached by President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping to postpone new tariff hikes. Congo's government Sunday postponed the release of the results of last weekend's presidential election, fueling suspicions President Joseph Kabila's ruling party is maneuvering to cling to power. The head of the Electoral Commission said officials have compiled 53% of the votes and will not release any information until all ballots have been tallied. On Friday, President Trump said U.S. military personnel and appropriate combat equipment had been deployed to Gabon to protect U.S. assets from possible violent demonstrations. British Prime Minister Theresa May says Britain would be in uncharted territory if her Brexit deal is rejected by Parliament. She says the vote will happen this month, and she will be setting out assurances on Northern Ireland in the coming days. She also said there should not be a second referendum.
What we see in Parliament is some people who are advocating a second referendum because they want to stop Brexit. Now, we've also got some people, you know, on the opposition, the chairman of the Labour Party, Ian Lavery, has said that this would be disrespectful to those people who went out and voted Leave. It would divide our country.
May made those comments during an interview with the BBC. Pope Francis urged European leaders on Sunday to stop bickering over the fates of 49 migrants stranded on two humanitarian rescue ships in the Mediterranean.
49 persone salvate nel mare Mediterraneo.
The Pope used his address marking the Feast of Epiphany to call for European leaders to find a safe port for those migrants. The comments brought him into a political battle between Italy and Malta over their fate. Last week, nearly 24 humanitarian groups called on the European Union to offer a safe port to both vessels. Polish officials have shut down 13 escape room entertainment sites due to safety flaws after five teen girls who were locked inside a room celebrating a birthday died in a fire at a private house that had no emergency evacuation route. Players in escape room games are locked inside a room or building and must solve puzzles and find clues that lead them to the key to unlock the door. I'm Nicole Livis, VOA News.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Plott in Washington.
We had our own observers on the field and our compilation system that works. So that's going to help us, you know, to see if Mr. Nanga is now, you know, willing to tell the truth to the world and also to the Congolese people.
DRC opposition party welcomes calls by a former U.S. president for the Electoral Commission to ensure poll results reflect the will of the people.
So now he cannot be found to say support the Ruto, not the candidate. It is very difficult. So then that is kind of compromise with the handshake with Raila Odinga.
An ally of Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says Deputy President William Ruto is not qualified to become the next president.
People are going to hide behind the constitution and they will remain intent to go to the election and break the law as well as acting without integrity and hypocritically anyway.
And a civil society group calls on Malawian Vice President Saulos Chilima to resign. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo's main opposition party, the Union for Democracy and Social Progress, or UDPS, has welcomed calls by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter to Electoral Commission officials to ensure transparency in the poll results. The Atlanta-based Carter Center called on the body to post polling station level results on its website and to communicate the status of the tabulation of the poll results. For reaction regarding the former U.S. president's call, I reach Abraham Luakabwanga, National Secretary in charge of communications for the main opposition UDPS.
We know that just at the closing of the election session on Monday, the machines were able to send back all the results internally since they were connected to the main server. And according to the report and the results that were shown, 73% of the results were able to be taken. And at the end of the result, the candidate that was leading the election was Felix Tshisekedi. So this was a big disappointment for actually President Kabila and his people. And we know that actually since they tried to assure the victory of their candidate, they are working in a way not to declare the real result. So we know that tricks are being made, false statements have been put in place or false document in order to change the result of the main election.
A lot of international groups, including former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, have expressed concern about what is going on, calling on the Electoral Commission to ensure that the results reflect the will of Congolese. What is your reaction to that?
Appreciate that because, as you know, in 2006, we had the same issue of the result of elections. Same thing happened in 2011 when UDPS, my party, claimed the victory, and that victory was not given to UDPS. So since there is no trust and Mr. Nanga is not trustworthy at all, we hope that international observers and also international community will take attentive look to this and help the Congolese people to be sure that the person that is going to be nominated or called such as president is the real one who won the election.
So you think international pressure brought bear on the CNE could have an impact on the transparency of the election results?
Yes, for sure. Let's say, for example, when Mr. Trump decided to send 80 Marines troops actually in Libreville, Gabon, that information, you know, bring a lot of fear on the Congolese side, knowing that those troops can intervene in the Congo if there is a mess. So now we know that there is a will to help Congolese people to be able to have a peaceful transition at the end of the day. So We keep on asking the international community to help us achieve this, and it's going to be a great year for the Congolese if by the end, you know, the CENI just agreed to publish the real result.
Recently, some religious leaders called on the CNE to make sure that the election results reflect the will of the people. A lot of criticisms were made against them, including the ruling coalition. What is your party's stance on the pronouncement by these religious leaders?
Every single group or institution that's gonna, organization that's gonna help, you know, to have the fair result being proclaimed is more than welcome. Since we know that the SANCO, with his 40,000 observers only for more than 70,000 polling stations were out there, we do ask them, you know, to be fair and proclaim if they have a red result. If they can show them to every single person out there, it's going to be great. But we, as Cash, we also keep on collecting our information, and I think by the end of the week, we should be able to give our result.
When does the Electoral Commission think this result will be announced after your meeting?
They say by possibly they may come out with a few of them by the middle of the week. They were talking about Wednesday. And around January the 15th, they could release the entire numbers or figures. So we're waiting to see what's going to be posted by or published by Wednesday. And that's going to help us to compare also, because we do have our own results. We had our own observers on the field and our compilation system that works. So that's going to help us, you know, to see if Mr. Nanga is now, you know, willing to tell the truth to the world and also to the Congolese.
Abraham Luaka Bwanga is the National Secretary in charge of communications for DRC's main opposition, UDPS. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization reports Ebola control operations have been restored in the DRC's conflict-ridden North Kivu province following pre-election protests late last year. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Anti-government protests preceding presidential elections on December 26th disrupted key Ebola response activities in some affected areas of DR Congo's North Kivu province, notably in Beni and Butembo. Crowds of people, angry at the government's decision to bar the region from voting in the election, vandalized an Ebola transit center and other health facilities. They prevented health workers from going to communities at risk and providing services needed to control the spread of this deadly disease. But the new year has brought good news. The World Health Organization says full operations have been restored in all locations as of January 1st. While the situation is calm right now, WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich tells VOA any interruption of activities could result in increased transmission of the virus.
There is a risk that all this work that is being put in place, and WHO has more than 380 people on the ground, alongside hundreds of people deployed by the Ministry of Health and other partners, that this effort may be put in danger if we are not able to go and put response activities in the community.
At the start of this new year, the number of reported Ebola cases stands at 608, including 369 deaths. WHO says no new cases have been reported among healthcare workers, leaving the number affected at 54, including 18 deaths. Jazarevich says it is difficult to predict what impact the temporary disruption of Ebola activities before the new year may have had on the spread of the virus. He says it is yet to be seen whether this will result in an upsurge in the number of cases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The vice chairman of the Kenyan ruling Jubilee Coalition says Deputy President William Ruto is not qualified to become the East African's country's next president. Former parliamentarian David Muraithi, a close ally of President Uhuru Kenyatta, says he plans to seek a legal opinion about what he alleges to be the deputy president's ineligibility. His remarks could undermine the vice president's effort to succeed the president when his second and full year term expires in 2022. But supporters say the deputy president will not be distracted by the antics of his opponent. For the latest on the controversy, I reach Harmon Mayora, political strategist, linguistics and languages professor at the University of Nairobi.
This is just a normal succession war in any political arrangement, where you have a sitting president doing his second and final term, and by constitution he cannot run again. So even before the lame duck president sets in, there'll be people jostling for power to succeed. Initially, it was automatic that the deputy president, William Ruto, was going to succeed. Unfortunately for Ruto, after the president entered into a truce with his key rival, opposition leader, Raila Odinga, things seem to have changed. It would appear the president also has changed his thinking about Ruto succeeding him. He hasn't quite stated it. But now that leaves the thing wide open, and then you see all these kind of moves being made by people.
Some are saying it is too early to even begin to talk about a succession since he has a few more years before that. Others are saying Deputy President William Ruto needs to know where he stands. What is your take about this?
Under normal circumstances, it is still too early because we are talking about 2022. The president has just finished his first year in office. He still has like 4 years to go. So honestly, it is still too early. But because of what the handshake is, we call it the handshake, the truce entered into by the president with his chief opponent. It has changed the political scenario in this country, making it difficult for the deputy president to sit waiting to be anointed. When this new arrangement, this new game plan that has brought the opposition leader almost into government, really unsettling things for him. So for his people and even himself will definitely fight for his place, because we can see something seems to be happening. If it wasn't for this partnership between the president and Raila Odinga, I don't think this noise will be the noise we are hitting now. I think it's because of that partnership.
You have the Jubilee Vice Chair, David Muraithi, attacking, literally, the Deputy President from his own party, saying he is not even qualified to run or to seek the political office. What makes him unqualified? He is the Deputy President of Kenya.
Definitely. He's not qualified. He's overqualified. According to the Constitution and any other rule in any book, he's overqualified. This is what I'm telling you. After the handshake, people could only speculate that perhaps this handshake does not mean well for us. Perhaps the president has somebody else now in mind, for whatever reason. Now, things are beginning to unfold. People are becoming more bold. People are coming up in the open. David Morales is a high-ranking party official. He's a close confidant of the president. And then most recently, the Secretary General of the party, Rafael Tuju, has said things that seem to suggest Ruto is not safe as far as 2022 is concerned. So in short, what I'm going to say, yes, the president has not pronounced himself clearly. But with the people so close to him now coming up in the office, we can only expect, and I hope for Ruto, we can only fear that soon the president himself will come out clearly.
There were suggestions that the president himself seemed to be stoking the controversial fire by being quoted by the local media, that people or Kenyans would be surprised by his speak. He has made matters worse instead of coming out to say that William Ruto, my deputy president, is my man. I have gone into political war with him on my side and we won re-election. Shouldn't it be clear enough?
You know, it has been asked, of course. And it was like that all through from 2013. The president has been hard to say he's going to do 10 years, and his deputy will do another 10 years. So he has said it before. But I'm saying things seem to have changed. And he brought his opponent into the picture, almost into government. So now he cannot be found to say that he supports Ruto, not that directly. It was very difficult. But then that is kind of compromise with the the handshake with Raila Odinga. And these guys are pushing him to state it. I doubt that he will do that. He will not do that. He may not come out in the open to say that I no longer support my deficit. But neither will he be expected to come out and say, I do support him for Trump's case. Whenever he's asked, he becomes almost rough, and he says he's concentrating on his big four, on his development and legacy. And the 2022 is out of the way for him, almost annoyed as he says. But that tells you he's not about to come out supporting his deputy open.
Harman Manyora is a political strategist and a linguistics and languages professor at the Kenya University of Nairobi. He spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. Forum for National Development, a Malawian civil society group, is the latest organization to call on Vice President Saulos Chilima to step down. The group says he should resign on principle because he has been accusing others of corruption. It also says it is unacceptable for the Vice President to continue to receive a monthly salary for not doing any work after falling out with President Arthur Peter Mutharika. But the Vice President has so far refused to step down. To learn more about the civil society's demand, I reach Fryson Chozi, National Coordinator for the Forum for National Development.
Yes, it's true that we are calling for the Vice President Saulos Chilima to resign and step down because since June 2018, when he left the party that sponsored him to government, he's not been doing any work related to government, which on our part, according to what he talks about, we're getting paid for work. Is hypocrisy on its part. But at the same time, getting by the measure of a lot of leaders around the globe who preach integrity, when you yourself, you think that, like, for example, he's been accusing this government of corruption, but he sticks around with the Federation government to us, you think that is lack of integrity and hypocrisy on its part.
He is supposed to be given work by President Arthur Peter Mutharika, who is his boss. Mm. If the boss is not giving him work to do, why blame him?
It's not necessarily that he's not been given work, but he has made his position untenable. You see, there's nothing wrong that his boss said that Chilima cannot do. But he himself decided to accuse his own government. He started disagreeing with his own government. That makes it very difficult for him to be delegated responsibility. By nature of what he's been saying, it would have been proper for him to step aside and continue accusing the government of issues that he's been raising. But it does not make any sense for him to accuse the government, accuse his boss, but at the same time, stick around hoping to be delegated responsibility.
Well, his supporters are saying that the Forum for National Development is in bed with the ruling party and doing the work for the ruling party because, if you remember, Nicholas Dawusi, who was the former information minister and Home Affairs minister currently, called on him to step aside as well. Are you doing the work of the ruling DPP party?
It's unfortunate that when somebody raises an issue, either way, if you raise an issue against the government, you're considered to be working with the opposition. If you raise an issue against anybody, another politician, it's the same, not an accusation. But the fact is that on principles of integrity, standing by the truth, Vice President Chilima was supposed to resign. We are already doing a job for the ruling party, but we are looking at the issues of integrity, national justice, and also for a leader that is supposed to lead by example. You see, he was asked to say, have you been working since June to date? Vice President Chilima said, I've not been working since June to date. And the question I have is, here is a person who says, no person must be paid for not working. Why is he being paid for not working?
Well, but that is not his job. Isn't his boss supposed to put him to work?
You see, if, for example, you make your position not tenable with your own boss, not by the boss making, but your own making, the best you can do is to resign. We've been given an example, like if you go into Britain, Prince Patel, if she disagreed with Theresa May, she resigned. That's integrity. If you don't agree with the system, you cannot stick around. If you talk of the U.S., so many members of the Trump administration have resigned for disagreeing with Trump as a president. In South Africa, some ministers have resigned for disagreeing with Jacob Zuma or even Ramaphosa. Why is it very difficult for Chilima, who disagrees with his boss in terms of being action, for him not to resign and be hide on the dignity of the law? So issue of integrity, whether it's supposed to be delegated, but you cannot make the position and turn another not to be delegated. At the same time, stick around to be hoping to be delegated. That's hypocrisy at its best.
Well, supporters of the UTM are saying that the Forum for National Development wants to stay relevant as a civil society organization. That is why you're making such noise that are unfounded, that they think undermines the Constitution, which calls for the president and the vice president to run on a ticket. And both of them are in this. Sharp disagreement has happened. Why don't you wait for the elections in May before calling for this? Is your organization want to stay relevant ahead of the May election? That is why you're calling on the vice president to step down.
My organization has been in existence for over 10 years. We cannot just remain relevant today because there's a need to be the vice president. The fact of the matter, you have right to put to say the president and the vice were elected together on a political ticket. If you go into the same constitution, section 83, it also gives room for the president to appoint the second vice president from a different political party, meaning that the constitution recognizes that this government is a political government. Chirima was not forced out of the political movement that he was elected to go together with Peter Mutharika. He has himself deliberately voluntarily resigned. By virtue of doing that, he was supposed to also show integrity that he cannot stick around to the same government that he has been accusing. Recently, he was attacked by the president of Malawi Congress Party, Lazarus Chakwera, repeating to say that he doesn't have a passion for him, he's got a better passion. So all these things are not to do about integrity, but a person looking at self-interest. So we cannot just keep quiet just because the election is around the corner. We also need to set a precedent. I think in Malawi, it's high time the issue of the vice president and the president be sorted out once and for all in terms of the law, so that we should not have these things happen again and again. Otherwise, people are going to hide behind the constitution and they will remain in time to go to the elections and break the law as well as act without integrity and hypocritically anyway.
Fry St. Chosi is the national coordinator for the Malawian Forum for National Development. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Leading Zimbabwean beer and soft drinks manufacturer and one of the country's biggest companies, Delta Beverages, backed down from its threat to start pricing its product in US dollars. The company said previously it will reject the Zimbabwean government bond notes, but gave in after talking with officials. For VOA, Adi Gondo gives us more on the story.
Delta said the government's fiscal and monetary measures do not provide easy access to foreign currency for companies that do not export products. That means the company has limited foreign currency to pay for the raw materials to make soft drinks and beer. The company's position has been that it would not accept the government's bond notes for its soft drinks and beer, preferring only US dollars. While the government has said the bond notes are on par with the dollar, in the markets, they trade at a far lower value. The company's decision to reject bond notes has since been reversed following a meeting with government officials and reassurances of foreign currency allocations by the country's Reserve Bank. Zimbabwe's economy is getting hit by rising inflation and a shortage of cash. The result is increasing shortages of basic consumer goods and imported raw materials. Busisa Moyo, the CEO of United Refineries, a cooking oil manufacturing giant, says the problem stems from decades of a government command economy.
So these are problems that are starting to emerge, which emanate from a non-market-based system. Centralized planning is a difficult tool to manage, and because the Reserve Bank is not the exporter, so they don't control exports. No, but I think we should start setting timelines, which means we have to be allowed maybe to price, to attract foreign currency for operations so that we are not dependent on the central bank. We don't.
Currently, the central bank keeps a tight leash on foreign currency reserves, even those earned by private companies that need the currency to buy raw materials. This system, market analysts say, creates an unhealthy dependence on the government. Business leaders such as Moyo say the time has come for a dialogue between government and business to change the system.
The issue of currency distortions has reached fever pitch, and it cannot be solved unilaterally by one player in the system. We have to come together. We have to workshop a plan of how we wean ourselves from where we are. We have to remove opacity from foreign currency inflows, the use thereof. We have to remove that and begin to discuss very openly and candidly. That's what will bring confidence. It has to be an inclusive plan. The challenge we are finding is that the piecemeal, the patch solution is a very dangerous, and very soon we're going to run out of time.
Some retailers in Blawa welcomed Delta's decision to abandon the bond notes. Linda Ndlovu is a manager at one of the local grocery stores.
As it is right now, they don't have supplies and we're not even selling. So if they start selling in foreign currency, at least maybe they can get their raw materials and we can have a steady supply for our customers. And I think to be good for our business, because people are coming here every day looking for drinks and there are no drinks. But at least if they're there, if they start selling in US dollars, we'll also have to start selling in US.
But there are challenges to using dollars. While many Zimbabweans sympathize with Delta, most are paid in the controversial bond notes. Robbie Moyo is a young graphic designer.
I think it's a catch-22 situation, because obviously you can't blame Delta for charging in US dollars because they have to buy whatever supplies and ingredients in forex. And if they're not generating that forex back, that means they have to halt production. But also at the same time, us as consumers, we are not getting paid in forex and US dollars. We're getting paid in bond because the government insists that it's 1:1 and they are not paying anyone in US dollars.
The problem for both consumers and manufacturers in Zimbabwe looks like to continue as the government struggles to make adjustments to the currency control regulations. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Happy New Year, and welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. As we begin the new year, let's look at what's coming in African football. Definitely, the Africa Cup of Nations in mid-year will be the highlight, but there will also be the Junior Championships, club competitions, and the Women's World Cup in France in what looks like an action-packed 2019. But first, this week, CAF Executive Committee will meet in Dakar, Senegal, to decide the emergency hosts of the African Cup of Nations finals between Egypt and South Africa to replace Cameroon, who were stripped of the right to hold the tournament. Egypt were last hosts in 2006, while South Africa stepped in to replace Libya in 2013. Again this month, the group stages of the new edition of the African Champions League get underway. The 16 teams in this year's field include 10 previous winners and 3 newcomers in CS Constantine and JS Sarra of Algeria and Zambia's FC Platinum. Group matches continue through mid-March with a quarter-final draw in March. Then on January 22nd, the draw for the group stages of the African Confederation Cup will take place in Cairo. At the beginning of February, Nigeria will be looking for a record-extending 8th title at the African Youth Championships in Niger and a place at the Under-20 World Cup in Poland in May. The 8-team field for the 2-week tournament in Maradi and Niamey include the hosts: Burkina Faso, Burundi, Ghana, Mali, Senegal, and South Africa. The delayed Super Cup between Esperance of Tunisia and Morocco's Raja Casablanca will be played in February in Qatar, in a move that has been widely criticized, but the exact date is yet to be announced. Little explanation for the move was offered when the announcement was made late last year, but such anomalies are not unknown to Africa. In the Gaddafi era, Libya hosted the Italian Super Cup, and Morocco has hosted the French version in the past too. In March, there will be the last round of qualifiers for the 2019 Nations Cup across the continent, with still another 10 places to be decided. There is still a chance for the likes of Burundi, the Comoros, and Lesotho to qualify for the finals for the first time, following in the footsteps of Madagascar and Mauritania. Then in April, Tanzania will host a 2-week Africa Under-17 Championship, at the end of which the top 4 finishers will go on to represent Africa in the Under-17 World Cup in Peru. The South African hosts are joined by Angola, Cameroon, Guinea, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, and Uganda. In June, there are also scheduled elections at the World Football Governing Body, FIFA. Gianni Infantino has already received Africa's endorsement as he seeks re-election as FIFA president at the organization's Congress in Paris. So far, no rival candidates have declared, although the Swiss-Italian has clashed with UEFA members over his efforts to overhaul the Club World Cup. So he might yet have a challenger as he seeks a further 4 years in charge. Elsewhere, Nigeria's John Michael Obi is looking for a new club after leaving Chinese Super League side Tianjin Tada by mutual consent with a year left on his contract. The 31-year-old left England Premier League side Chelsea in January 2017, but injuries meant he made just 31 appearances for Tianjin. Obi, however, is reported to be keen on forcing his way back into the Nigerian team ahead of this year's Africa Cup of Nations. Meanwhile, the Guinea Football Federation has appointed the mother of Manchester United midfielder Paul Pogba as an ambassador for women's football. Yewo Moriba is herself a former international with Guinea women's team. The Guinea Federation is hoping that France international Paul Pogba and his twin brothers Florentino and Matthias will support their mother in her new role. Finally, American former five-weight world champion Floyd Mayweather beat Japanese kickboxer Tashin Nasukawa in an exhibition boxing match on Monday. The 41-year-old American took only 140 seconds to beat Nasukawa in Tokyo. The 20-year-old Nasukawa was knocked down 3 times and ended the fight in tears. Mayweather had a 4-kilogram weight advantage for the contest, which was worth a reported $9 million and was widely criticized. Both fighters are undefeated in their respective sports, and the defeat will not count towards Nasukawa's record. And that's about all the time we have for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sports Nightline, Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. And you'll be hearing from Tommy Flavor featuring Calligraph Jones with Ready, Maestro featuring Wizkid immediately, Juliana Kanyamozi with Sanyu Liange, and Zoro with Mabuza Mabuza. Enjoy.
Above. I can't believe him and the girls are sucker for love. Now they say opposites attract, but so me that and I thug. Anytime I see you, sis, he might attack a hug. Follow me, G-Mama, but you're up your nesa. Follow me, G-Cari, it's forever. We will be together, you and all the mighty armor. Now watch the eyes, you see what coming. I don't know why not trip, what talking me cool on it. But you know it's made for me. I love it when I'm on it. Love how you scream my name when I hit it in the morning. And did I mention for Loki Jama, ze una ni bamba? The way you drive me crazy, me shuffle, got me kind. Would you believe it when I say me go kwa ajili yako? Cause of my reputation, utadhani ni vako. Bani amini nyako, nyakateri gabacho. Till the end of time, would you aware, don't I bear macho?
No. Oh, yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Just let me know. I'm
wapi niko kwa ajili yako uko tayari just let me know wapi niko kwa ajili yako
Immediately she start to turn up. Immediately she start to feel the sound. Oh. Immediately they start to turn up. Oh. Immediately she start to feel the sound. Oh. Yeah. Everybody just. I know, body up, baby, a body. Mommy, water, give me one test. Now I don't gas, so you wind up. The party don't cost, so you bind up. I want city royal. I want royal city. Now I don't gas, so you wind up. The party don't cost, so you bind up. I want city royal. I want royal city. You need that bitch, start to turn up. Immediately she start to feel the sound. Oh. Immediately they start to turn up. Oh. Immediately she start to feel the sound. Oh. Everybody jo Latino jo everybody jo jo Latino. She's a vibe, oh, give me vibe. A body tight, oh, give me wine. Befum. A body good dun. As you step in a place, I don't see your logo. Now your waist be the reason I go buy motto. If you don't gas, so you wind up. If party don't cost, so you bind up. I want Cinti Royal.
From Uber taxi to Range Rover, oh, the boy don't hammer, oh. Piano solo, kele Jehovah, oh, me 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 kwala yosa, oh. My landlord is now no my tenant. You know be man power, no but no no. Yankee, China, UK, Malaysia, Jehovah, Bawomo, Garanya, oh. From Uber taxi to Range Rover, oh, the boy don't hammer, oh. China, UK, Malaysia, Jehovah, Bawomo, Garaya. Kene de lichuku, mbunye li mnotito de lichuku. Kubu kubu kai shigu wapuku. Ifu lafu fumo keta lafu funo boro. Last Christmas, imanazu friji kanji shesu. This Christmas, ngi wifi na abo wano for bebezu. Even God can't give me for the life that I'm living. Abuni malomu no ishi know where I'm living. Still beyond my believing, kando musi chachi. Nena de jemu gobu movie. Gare gare keep it moving. Manko changu di the type of joy that I'm feeling. And you praise God for singing. From Uber taxi to Range Rover, oh, the boy don't hammer, oh. China, UK, Malaysia, Jehovah, Bawomo, Garaya.
que nenhum encaixa no meu. Baby, esse beijo é demais. O que o teu corpo faz, mais nenhum faz. Derretes todo o gelo em mim. Não sei viver.
And that is Yasmin Esquece o Mundo. That was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. This year, 2019, South Africa will conduct major general election when provincial and national leaders will be elected. The parliament will then select the new president of South Africa. Undoubtedly, the land issue, which remains unresolved, will be at the center stage of the debate during the elections. As may be recalled, last year, the African National Congress, ANC, proposed that the constitution of South Africa should be changed to make it possible for the government to expropriate land without compensation, the lands being mostly owned by white farmers. This was a controversial issue as the international community, particularly the Western institutions and governments, criticized that decision. The major opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, has also come out strongly against the ANC proposals. And there have been discordant voices also among some black African politicians. The main reason for this controversy may be due to what happened in Zimbabwe in the past, because the issue of land has bedeviled the peoples of South Africa, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. Under the presidency of former President Robert Mugabe, he moved, after many years of reluctance, to change the constitution of Zimbabwe and seized white farms and redistributed them to the blacks. Some say this was done in a very disorderly manner. Again, this action was criticized by Western governments and Western financial institutions. In fact, sanctions were imposed on Zimbabwe, calling on the government to make proper and adequate compensation to the white farmers. The response of former President Mugabe was that at the Lancaster negotiations in London for the independence of what became Zimbabwe, he refused to sign the final document because the question of land was not clarified. But to get his signature and agreement, the then Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, promised that the British government will pay compensation to the white farmers who may lose their land in Zimbabwe. That was not done, according to President Mugabe. And when Tony Blair of the Labour Party took over, he rescinded that commitment. And he had always argued and refused to pay any compensation to white farmers until he was forced out of office. Now, under the new government of Zimbabwe, in an effort to revive the declining economy and to attract mainly Western investors to rebuild the economy, confronted with the problem that sanctions are in place, many Western investors are reluctant to come until the government had paid compensation to white farmers. Many of them have already left Zimbabwe. There's either in Zambia, in Mozambique, or in South Africa. So there has been a rethink in Zimbabwe. And the argument is now being made that while the government could not compensate white farmers for the land which was seized from black people during colonial times, they could consider compensation for the investment made by white farmers on the land. And this is the reason why in the current budget of Zimbabwe, the government has held $53 million for the start of such compensation. Already the Minister of Land had invited more than 1,000 white farmers or the beneficiaries to come to his office to start the compensation. The white farmers have said that that amount is just too small, and even the total amount of $9 billion for the total compensation is unacceptable. And they have used the enormous lobbying abilities to convince Western governments and Western institutions not to take the government of Zimbabwe seriously and to maintain sanctions. These are the issues which South African voters will have to think seriously about as they discuss the issue of land in South Africa and as they go to the polls. The bottom line is that, regrettably, at the time when land was taken from the black people in Southern Africa without compensation and left in misery, there were no international institutions to protect them and to give them remedy. But today, we have a plethora of Western financial institutions and governments that would not tolerate expropriation without compensation. This may be injustice, but this is the reality that the South African voters will have to face. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Tiang Wang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, it is the same moon that wanes today that will be the full moon tomorrow. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.